Welcome to Letter from the Capitol, a weekly podcast covering national security, economic, and cultural issues.
Welcome to Letter from the Capitol. I'm your host, John Wallstetter. Today we will discuss a world aflame as America flees. We see in three of the great regions of the world, the Mideast, Eastern Europe, and Asia, tensions rising, risks of conflict rising as America retreats. So let's take a look at each of those three areas, and then I will try and tie them together with a common thread. In the Mideast, what we have seen over the last couple of years is the disintegration of the post-World War I colonial order that was established primarily by Britain and France, by the victorious powers at the various peace conferences after the end of that conflict, which started a century ago and came to an end some 96 years ago. The United States is pulling back from the region and as a result has less influence than at any time since 1945, and into this vacuum have rushed other forces. First, with Iran. In Iran, the United States threw away the prospect of overthrowing the Islamic Republic of Iran after the 2009 fraudulent elections, betting on negotiations with Iran. The result is an Iran that is closer than ever to nuclear weapons status, and the administration has taken the position that Iran can have a nuclear capability so long as it doesn't make a weapon, despite the fact that when you have a nuclear capability, making a weapon can be done in a very short time and probably before being detected. If Iran is to be stopped, it will be stopped by an Israeli military strike. There is no other likely way to delay and perhaps end Iran's nuclear quest for the time being. Israel, I think, can probably do a better job than many people are guessing it can do. It historically has done that. In Syria, the administration had a chance to intervene a couple of years ago before there were any al-Qaeda or Islamist groups. It was a secular uprising. It was peaceful, and they had a chance to dislodge the Iranians from their position in Iran, and instead, President Obama stood down. The next thing you know is Secretary of State John Kerry invited the Russians in, and the result has been that while there have been some chemical weapon dismantlings, Assad remains in power. He doesn't govern the whole country and probably won't, but with more than 150,000 killed, he has shredded Obama's credibility on red lines when he said if there's any chemical weapons used, that would be a game changer. Well, he used them, and he's still there. I think you're going to see a fragmented Syria and a long civil war. In Iraq, the president had a chance to get a status of forces agreement, a SOFA, as they call it in military parlance, in 2011, and all he had to do was not require the Iraqi parliament to ratify it, which it wasn't going to do, because it would be appearing to make American soldiers immune from prosecution for committing crimes. The president insisted that the Iraqi parliament ratify, knowing it was a deal breaker, and kept reducing the number of troops way below what the military wanted. The result is that when in 2009 intelligence intercepts had al-Qaeda leaders telling al-Qaeda fighters, don't go to Iraq, we've lost there, that having won a position there of relative stability after a horrendously expensive war in blood and treasure, President Obama has tossed it away. Iraq, as we know it, is not going to stay together. It will fracture into the three provinces that existed up until the end of the First World War. The Kurds are going to try and have an independent state in the north. They have a pretty good chance, and if we had more strategic sense, we would back that. The Iranians will have more influence, but they will not be able to dominate the entire country. In Libya, we overthrew Gaddafi, or helped Gaddafi overthrow while leading from behind, But we did not have follow through, and through negligence and inattention, we lost four brave men when security warnings were ignored, and that country is now descended into anarchy. In Egypt, the administration managed to alienate all sides of the Egyptian polity, and they allowed the Muslim Brotherhood to take over in an election that was fair, but then the Muslim Brotherhood did what the Nazis did in 1933. They had an internal coup, and the result of that was that there was a popular counter coup by the military supported by 30 million Egyptians in the streets. We confuse elections with democracy. The Muslim Brotherhood had no interest in governing democratically. It was going to establish a Sharia state. So now the Egyptians pay little or no attention to us. John Kerry obsessed over the Palestinians, which is a marginal dispute that has no chance of being solved. Here you have a unity government between Hamas and the Palestine Authority. There is no Israeli government that can make a peace with people who are firing rockets into your cities and who are jumping up and down for joy and celebrating terrorists. So this is a situation where in every place in the Middle East of consequence, our position has deteriorated. The Saudis, I don't want to forget them, have basically told us they'll have an independent foreign policy after having been tied to us for a full generation. That was a difficult relationship. The Saudis did some things that were very harmful to us, but they were helpful at other times. Those days are gone. Turning to Europe, Vladimir Putin has mounted a challenge by annexing the Crimea last March and by taking other parts of eastern Ukraine. He then desires, perhaps, to annex parts of the Baltic nations, two of which are bordering Russia, have Russian-speaking populations, those being Latvia and Estonia, where about 25 to 30% of the population is Russian or White Russian. And in the provinces that border Russia, well over 50%, in some places 90%, are Russian-speaking and are closer to Russia. And they might try to annex parts of those states in the same way they did the Crimea. Because those two countries are, along with Lithuania, the third Baltic country, part of NATO, under Article 5 of the 1949 NATO Treaty, the United States is obligated to eject Russia by force if necessary, as we would be if Russia occupied Little Odessa in Brooklyn, near Coney Island and Brighton Beach. If President Obama does not do so, then what is going to happen is that our alliance in NATO will hollow out overnight. It'll be a name only. It will mean nothing. And all our other alliances will hollow out as well. A similar problem is in Asia, where China wants to annex some islands, most notably what it calls the Diaoyu Islands, that are known as Senkaku in Japan. They're just off the coast in the South China Sea. Japan legally has possession. If the Chinese take those islands, Japan will have been invaded, as it were. The United States has a 1954 mutual defense treaty with Japan, and we will be as obligated to come to Japan's aid in that as we are in Europe with NATO. If we do not do so, the same will happen. And everyone is watching everything here, because in each case, America, when it pulls back, invites more, not less, disorder, and takes greater risks of nuclear conflict. In the Mideast, if Iran is a nuclear weapons state, Saudi Arabia has already spoken to the Pakistanis, how many petrodollars for how many bombs. The Kuwaitis will do the same thing. Egypt will find some way to go after nuclear weapons, probably Turkey as well. And you'll have an arms race the likes of which you've never seen in the Middle East, and sooner or later the chance even of an accidental war happening in a place like that is increasing. And if you have multiple nuclear powers in the Mideast, then it will be said of the Mideast anew that what was said about the Balkans in the run-up to the First World War, that it produces more politics than can be consumed locally. In Ukraine and in the Baltics, in China, in the seas there, they are watching as well. There is a risk if we get in a conventional conflict with either China or Russia, let alone both, that nuclear weapons would be used at some point. The thing is, President Obama might be forced to do something more than he's doing in the Mideast if, for example, the Baltics are invaded. And the problem there is that the Baltics, in President Obama's mind, are a marginal part of the United States defense system, whereas they are central to Vladimir Putin's desire to rebuild as much as possible of the old former Soviet Union. They mean more to Putin. And Putin just may take that risk and he may miscalculate. In 1939, after Hitler had succeeded in annexing in the prior years territory without being dragged into war, he invaded Poland, though he had been warned by Britain and France not to do so, and he found himself at war with England and France, and World War II started. That's what happens with miscalculations. And the Japanese could go nuclear very quickly if China annexes those islands. Indeed, Japan has just modified its constitutional interpretation to allow it to deploy more self-defense forces and to carry out more missions. This is a tectonic event because since 1952, the Japanese have had a limitation of 1% of their budget and also very limited in terms of what they can do in defense. In conclusion, we're seeing a world where, to use a term from physics, entropy is increasing, geopolitical entropy in this case. Entropy is the measure of disorder in a physical system. Systems tend to move from order towards chaos unless work is done by some mediating principle to prevent that. Withdraw the mediating principle and order decreases and chaos increases. The United States had pursued Pax Americana since 1945. And historically, the world has been more stable when there has been an imperial power that has held back some of the forces of disorder. The president seemed to think that if we pull back, more benign local forces plus the United Nations would create a safer world. The exact opposite is the truth. And so, as we have a world aflame, we have an America that is fleeing from its commitments, with a deteriorating military, declining budgets, and everybody can see this around the globe, but that fellow at 1600 and his supporters here in the United States. It is a more dangerous world, and the risk of nuclear conflict as well is arising, and should that come to pass, this world would change in an instant more terrifyingly than any one of us can imagine. For a letter from the Capitol, I'm John Wallstetter. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute. Letter from the Capitol is a trademark and copyright of John Wallstetter. Rebroadcasts of this podcast are allowed only with permission of the Discovery Institute. For more information, please visit www.letterfromthecapitol.com or www.discovery.org.